So today we're going to talk about developing an open data strategy. And the session goes twice. The first session that we had with this, we did have three guest speakers. We lost one yesterday. She had to go home. But with me today is Travis Hardy. And introduce himself and tell more. He's got a whole disclosure statement.
Let me do that now.
That's what your agent says, so we can do that later.
There was a writer on my green room.
And I'm Andrew Stauffer. So I'm product manager with Civic Technology, which covers open data and the hub product that we have currently in development. So what we start to see here is, the hub really starts to become a little bit of a pattern where we want to develop an open data strategy. Can we do this on our own? Absolutely. And why we want to put this session together and bring people here to talk about this is open data is actually really important. There's some amazing things that we can do with this. It's incredible how this can actually change the world. And there's times, though, when people say, oh, well, we have open data. It's out there. You can just go download it. And we talk to them and kind of follow up and like, what are your goals? What do you want to do? And they're like, we want to do better open data. Like, that sounds like you want to do really good metadata. Like, you got to have something else in here. Like, you have to have a bigger driver, right? So within our community, whether it's our city, county, state, different organization of ours, we tend to have different goals and initiatives. So in this case, we start to look at a city that we want to be a safe city. We want to be a healthy city. Excellent. These are really good objectives. Now, what are some of the different goals behind this that we can start to try to drive change in our community and actually influence with your data? And as we mentioned, these higher level objectives start to break down. So when we say a safe community, what does that mean? Oh, that could mean transparency in policing, so increasing trust with our citizens and police department. That's under safety. We could also add in Vision Zero. We don't like pedestrians getting hit by cars. Nobody really likes that one, right? There's a lot of different aspects in there. So one of the best things you can do is try to figure out, what is that one key initiative? What is the one thing that, the mayor or council really wants to achieve in our community? And how can we get data relevant to that, share it out, and actually really start to make a big impact around it? Because one of the things that we'll start to see is the data that you're working with, that you own and that you create, is when you go to share it, you're engaging with this whole other community. So this could be the civic tech developer, but you can actually make a huge impact on the average citizen. Also, as these things move up the chain, this is something that did support that mayoral initiative. We're showing, actually, he got elected or she got elected for a certain reason. We voted for them because they promised us this. All right, well, let's start to put some data behind that. Let's try to prove and enforce, how are they doing this? Or demonstrate how they're doing it. So a couple examples here that we can take a look at is what LA did with Vision Zero, right? So they put together an open data site using ArcGIS Open Data. That was their main page, LA GeoHub. And then what they went out and did is said, all right, we're going to create a second page. The second page is going to be all dedicated to Vision Zero. It's going to have a lot of information in here talking about what the city's trying to do, what's our role, how do we want to accomplish this. We're going to go ahead and put some applications on top of it so citizens can come view it. And then there's the data behind it if somebody wants to go grab it. So this is almost the saying, we have a bunch of apps and they're all powered by open data. You can choose to use the app or you can choose to go back and download the data. Now, for the sake of sanity, I do want to demo some of these sites, but going back and forth in PowerPoint's a little brutal, so we'll get to a demo section here in just a minute. Another one, so we talked about this transparency in policing. This is a big one. So there's this initiative out of the White House, and it's sponsored and carried out by the Police Foundation, of how do we increase transparency in policing? So they're going essentially city to city saying, can you release data such as officer-involved shootings? What is all the data that you have on use of force? Because obviously we had some problems in the past couple years where we have this kind of massive civil unrest, there's riots in the street, people are saying we don't trust the police. Now, that's kind of bad. So what if we're a little bit more transparent around this? How can we establish more trust? And the Police Foundation has been doing a really great job as they go to all these different cities. They're saying, great, you're sharing this out as open data. Now they're going to go ahead and try to federate, get all of this data put together, and then just do a lot of messaging behind this. And hey, if there's any bad apples in the bunch, hopefully they start to get found and pushed out, right? Because the police is actually being really, really open here. We also have, and this data.gov got its big kick when Obama said, hey, we want to jump all into this open data thing. We're going to get it out there. All right, let's get data.gov. Let's start getting all this content in here. There's some Fed agencies that are actually required to share data to data.gov. Is any Fed agencies in here? One, two, three, four. Do you have to share data into data.gov? Yes? No? Yes? 50 split. All right. So half of federal government agencies have to share data. No, a good chunk. So how do we submit into this? There's a process there. But what we can also do is, with ArcGIS Open Data, all the data sets that we share into our site, we can share out this catalog. And the catalog has all that data through a URL. We can give that to data.gov. They index it. And it becomes a really cool process. If I want to add data to data.gov, I create an item in ArcGIS Online that points to my layer. I share it out as open data. Next time data.gov indexes, it shows up over there. Does that sound easier than how you do it now, or harder? Easier. I'm glad we can make your life a little bit better. And then, last but not least, when we start to think about some different things we can do around an open data strategy, we always talk about engaging a community. I think a lot of the times the answers and responses around this, or messaging, gets really fluffy. You have civic developers that are going to come fix all the city's problems. Just share your data out. And then nobody shows up. what happens? Well, it turns out there's a whole other group. And this isn't always true. There are some communities that actually have really strong civic development community. So I know, like, in the Research Triangle, Raleigh, Durham, Cary, very active. New York, very active. But, not every single community has these civic hackers, but we all have schools. So if we put together all of this open data and we want to know who's going to use it, how about K through 12 school system? We give ArcGIS Online away to every single school in the United States. All they have to do is request it, turn it on. One of the cool stories behind this is there was a city outside Denver, they had shared out their business listings. And so a junior high thought, hey, this is cool. Let's download the business listings. And they called every single business and asked them one question. Does anybody want to guess at what that question is? It's Thursday. We're excited. Let's get a guess. You have a good answer. No. The pointer. Yes, back here. Are you hiring or will you donate money? Almost. No, and that's good. I'm glad we got some participation, especially this late in the week. Anybody want to take another guess? What? Where are you located? We did have the coordinates, so we knew where they lived on the map. That was a good one, though. Do you have Wi-Fi? And the business would say yes or no. So they added a field to the data. They recorded yes and no answers. They made a hotspot map of where you can get Wi-Fi around the city. And then they called the city back up and said, hey, do you want our data? We just improved your open data, and we made this really cool map. And the city's like, well, of course we would. That's a really good attribute, and that's a really good map to share out. So this junior high got put on the city's website, and their map's there, and it's available. Really, really cool story, and I was so glad that they forwarded it on. And just being an open data geek, when they sent it to us, I was like, oh, that's so cool. And like, I started calling up all my teammates, and they're like, why are you calling me? There's this like messaging system. I'm like, shut up. This is so cool. Look at this. So we got all excited. So I did promise you we'd kind of switch over and take a look at the demo slide, or demos here for just a second. So here's the LA Vision Zero site. Again, this is a focused open data site towards a specific initiative. This is something anybody can put together and create. We talk about, you know, the Safer Los Angeles. We have this pretty nice interactive chart. Now, this is something custom that they put in here. But what we like and why this chart is important is it can show progress. Are we actually improving our goals or are we getting worse? If we're improving, hey, we're doing good. The strategy worked. If we're doing worse, hey, maybe we need to start doing something different to achieve Vision Zero in our community. You know, we need to start educating citizens, put up signs, you know, do a bigger effort here. But this is almost like a live stat counter. You know, is the mayor succeeding in what they promised us as part of building a safe community? And then we mentioned that they highlighted just specific applications. So awesome. As a citizen, I'm super grateful that you put all this data back here. I've got two small kids at home. I don't have much free time. I'm not going to download this and go build my own apps. Thank you, City, for building apps that take a look at this existing data and lets me kind of pan and zoom and explore it. And then what they did is also these apps kind of take on a similar branding, right? So it feels really nice that I'm always at this, like, LA site. And then as I scroll down, awesome. I can browse by categories. So if I want to check out, you know, these three data sets, these three, or these three, because I'm really interested in actually downloading the content behind these apps, because these apps are powered by open data, I can get to them. And then just some general purpose information. I really like this app that we actually put together at Esri, working with officer-involved shooting data that came out of Austin, Texas. So again, we know the goal behind this is try to increase trust through transparency. So what we see here, here are the different officer-involved shootings from 2000 to 2014, color-coded by outcome, which can be unfortunate. The same exact data is now rendered different, where we're going to go ahead and look at this by the officer's race. So we can start to see, is there any trends or what's happening here? Taking a look at this chart, so 63 cleared. Okay. You want to look at this one? Okay. Officer's age, you know, is there any sort of trend with this? Is there a bunch of new cadets on the force that are just a little happy? Or is this an aging crew? Again, exact same incidents rendered a third time. Actually looking at the suspect. What was the suspect's race? And do we want to explore this? What type of weapon were they using when this, you know, significant event occurred? Now what's really cool about this is anybody can go build this. This is just a web ops dashboard that's wrapped inside a story map. And they're just presenting the different views from one data set. From a citizen's perspective, it's almost like I have this cube and I can sit here and turn it around and see it from these different angles. If I want to download it, sure I can. But presenting some of this information in this discoverable way and organizing it, great. You put some context to it. We don't just share it out there and let the media misuse it. We're helping them and understand and guide them how to actually use and understand the data. Next one we said we'd look at is data.gov. So this is one of my favorites. We go ahead and do a search in here. Wi-Fi, don't fail me now. We go ahead and see 153 data sets found for Charlotte. If I click here, we see that we get Charlotte zoning. It has its licensing information, so title, description, tags. And as we scroll down here, I can actually see, ArcGIS open data set. So I hit this link right here. Let's go over here. Aha, now I'm driven over to Charlotte's ArcGIS open data site, or really just their open data site. So you can actually drive traffic to your own sites by registering with data.gov. You're just increasing, you know, it's kind of like a bigger drawer where people are going to look for data. So you go ahead and put your content in there. And again, for the Fed crowd, all we had to do is just say share in the open data group, and then data.gov knows how to go ahead and index this. If you do want details on that, well, we can talk gory tech details at the break. And then last but not least, we take a look over at the ConnectEd site. So this is actually really cool. We have a lot of these instructional materials already in here. So if you're a history teacher or you're a little bit more passionate about earth sciences, great, I can go in here and explore and check out the different activities that are here for a teacher to just go ahead and start working with the students. Any thoughts or questions on this part so far? And putting some context and kind of a face in front of your just your data. Oh, everybody's like so excited we're quiet.
Stunned silence.
It is. Cool. So I think that's where we're just going to go ahead and where I want to go and introduce Travis Hardy. So this is Travis. He's going to talk about some data that they shared out publicly as open data and how this had an impact in actually building a community. So, Travis?
Thanks, Andrew. I'm going to say the worst 13 words you could possibly hear on a Thursday as last days of the conference. Hi, I'm here from DC and I'm here to help. If that doesn't make those people on the ends kind of clear, am I a little too loud or is that... Okay. Good? Okay. All right. I kind of have a booming voice anyway, and these mics have been jacked up all week. As Andrew mentioned, my name is Travis Hardy. I am the director of geospatial practice area at Ardent Management Consulting. But for purposes of this presentation, I'm going to switch to my other personality, which is for the last about 9.5 years, I've supported the Department of Homeland Security's Geospatial Management Office. And in specifically kind of in data sharing and data information. And so what I have to say today is actually talking about the evolution of DHS, the Geospatial Management Office, towards our open community and open sharing. But I did just want to kind of start off with one other caveat. These are not formal remarks from the Department of Homeland Security. These are just my thoughts and my experiences having worked there. So now that I have that caveat out of the way, I can continue with my presentation here.
You say the wrong thing, somebody's going to drop out of the ceiling and haul you
away. Yeah, exactly. For those of you listening on the NSA phone next to me. Actually, one other quick... See, I'm already clearing people out of the room. One other quick survey I want to do. How many people have ever heard of HSIP, or Homeland Security Information Protection Data? Okay, of those people with their hands raised, how many are federal government agencies? Okay, so most of them. How about Homeland Infrastructure Foundation Level Data Subcommittee? It's a mouthful. Anybody ever heard of that? Some of the same hands we had earlier. Okay. Another show of hands. How many have ever heard of the Kardashians? Yeah, everybody. All right. So why did I bring that up? So the first part, HSIP, Highfield, what I'm going to talk about a little bit, those have been historically kind of closed communities or very kind of tight-lipped communities, and mainly the 70 square miles of craziness that we call DC, working in federal agencies. And then, of course, on the other end of the extreme, we have the Kardashians who do, like, way too much out in the open, in my opinion. And so what I want to talk about, and what Andrew, I think, originally asked me to talk a little bit about is how did this evolution or transformation to open data help transform our own community? And really start to unlock some really good goodness, as well as add members to our community. So that's a little bit of what I'm going to talk about today. Just as a shameless plug, right there is probably the only screenshot I'm going to show of our Highfield Open site, but certainly afterwards I can give you a demo if anybody's interested. But I think, you know, I don't really want to spend too much time about the technical aspects of how we created this. Because pretty much we went to our ArcGIS Online for Organizations account, we checked a box, and boom, there's some custom skinning and icons that we created, but that was like the easiest part. What I want to talk to you and share with you a little bit today is some of the harder parts, some of the things that we ran into behind the scenes to help instantiate that. And I hope that at least you won't make the same mistakes as we did, or maybe some of the things that... that we went through can be helpful in your journey as you're kind of working with open data to support your community or your organization. Okay, So other than the three people who already knew what we were, let me share with you a little bit about HIField, the Homeland Infrastructure Foundation Level Data Subcommittee. This is a subcommittee that is historically put together after the tragic events of 9/11 to help find nationwide infrastructure data to support homeland security, homeland defense, emergency preparedness, and communities of the like. So our principal goal is to scrounge the earth, ideally in authoritative data circles, to find data that's of nationwide coverage to support these very important missions so that we can best prepare in the event of an event, respond when if an event should happen, God forbid, as well as train and exercise and learn from what happens after we respond to those events and provide critical geospatial data that can benefit all. It's a pretty broad mission. And that subcommittee is comprised of both federal agencies, so DHS, National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, EPA, USGS, others from the DOI, Department of Justice and their related organizations, as well as folks from the associations of state and local. So NISGIC is a member of our subcommittee. NAPSIG, the National Alliance for Public Safety, GIS, is a member. ERISA, GITA, other organizations that have constituents with vested equities in the homeland security and homeland defense arena. And so on paper, that big, long, bloated sentence defines in a charter somewhere what HIField is. But as our friends from the federal government here can tell you, how many subcommittees do you know are in the federal government? And so I think makes HIField a little bit more than just a subcommittee is this aspect of community that we try and cultivate, and a little bit of how both working with open data as well as our secure data has helped us to do that. So the way that I look at this is the HIField is actually three legs of the same stool. Yes, there is the subcommittee that sits within a very formal federal geographic data governance structure somewhere in the Beltway of DC. But it has two other legs that are critically important to generating success for us. It has an executive secretariat and program staff that are actively working day-to-day, in and out, listening to the user community, generating and responding to their questions, their concerns, or at least triaging and prioritizing requirements to be put on a subcommittee agenda somewhere. So that's kind of the, I guess, the behind-the-scenes development shop, the PMO, if you will. And then it has our operational user community. And that user community is made up of over, at least as best we can track it, about 6,500 people throughout the country. And they range from everywhere from federal government to military to first responders, as well as academia and private sector folks who are constantly have a vested interest in some way, shape, or form in helping to secure and protect our homeland. And the way that we go about doing this as a community itself is we're looking to identify data sets across that might help us serve our nation better. We're inventorying those data sets so that everybody understands what data holdings we have. We're obtaining or acquiring new data. If for some reason there's a gap and no one out there can really fulfill it, we might go to the private sector and license that data and bring that in to support our community. And then we're working to enable that data for online dissemination, whether it be in an open standpoint or even in a secure manner. And then we kind of go through the rigor of the life cycle, right? We're going to maintain that data, we're going to archive it, and we're going to work through our feedback channels, both at a formal subcommittee level, those folks that are guiding and leading and paying for the program, as well as an informal channel, those emails and phone calls that we get from our user community about ways that we can make our community better. So I talked a little bit about who we are, but I want to talk about how we operated in the past and kind of where we're headed to now and where we've arrived with open data. So shortly after 9/11, hundreds of data sets were gathered by the federal government and kind of contained and burned to a DVD, now seven DVD sets, I think it was. And it really just supported federal agencies itself. We were in our own little box. And that was kind of where we were contained. We were helping just the federal community understand nationally what geospatial data assets were there to help us respond better to the homeland security arena. But then we quickly realized that as word got out about this data set, this HCIP data existing, you know, emergency responders were coming up to us and saying, hey, it doesn't help us that you guys have this data up in D.C. We're the ones, we're the first on the scene. We're the ones that respond to these events. We're the ones that have to prepare for these events. They affect our communities. And that helped us open up a dialogue with our state and local partners about what we could do to potentially kind of loosen the grip of this DVD that had been stamped for official use only for federal agencies. And that dialogue was very constructive and positive, and it led to a lot of good initial first steps. And it allowed us to kind of create something that we kind of call an interim first step in an opening up that HCIP data, and that was HCIP Freedom. Any chance anybody's ever heard of HCIP Freedom? Okay. And that data set was still a snapshot of time of a much or a subset of a much larger data set put out there on the web for just download in File Geo database, but you still had to kind of be an approved HISN user logging in, and it usually took like a, some people felt like it took like a secret handshake to get access to that data. And then I think we had a period of reflection as we got further away from the tragic moments of 9/11 and into sort of what is now this sort of open data world. And we had the emergence of the President's Open Data Initiative. And we were able to kind of leverage or parlay the earlier successes from HCIP Freedom to say, okay, who else might need access to this data? And there was data sets that people just didn't understand why they were kept secure. It's like, you know, I can drive by all my fire stations or all my hospitals. Why are you guys keeping that, you know, away from us? So through a series of feedback meetings, subcommittee conversations, you know, we were able to kind of then look at, okay, what if we took that 7-DVD set, which contained over 275 data layers on it, that really their access and use constraints were public and open, broke it over our knee, and put those 275 out there for the world to use? You know, would that be something that the federal government would consider doing? And how would that best, how could we enable that data so it best served the open community, as well as end users that we had never even thought of who might want to leverage this data? So that led us to basically November of this year and then unveiling Highfield Open in February of this year to the world. And so this was very interesting, but 200 DHS, an agency that sometimes has to be as top secret with its information as the CIA, but has to respond as quickly to the citizenry as the Red Cross, took this step of putting 275 data layers out there and said, let's roll. Let's see how this works. And so I think what I now want to talk a little bit about was some of the leadership and the mind shift changes that led us to that point and some of the lessons learned that we kind of garnered from doing that as a federal agency, and then talk a little bit more about, you know, where we think this is all headed. But before I do it, any questions? Their minds are blown.
Mm-hmm. Gone.
Gone. The Whiskey Girl music still ringing in their ears. So that step between step 3 and 4, right, breaking down barriers to just full open release of data, a lot of stuff had to take place in our culture as DHS, as well as our working partners. We had to make a fundamental shift to pivot to say, look, we can no longer be the only stewards and protectors of the homeland. We have to take a whole of the nation approach. We have to leverage the first responder community better. We have to leverage citizen science. We have to leverage academia. And to do that, we need to seed that market space so they will come and work with us. And Highfield Open is just one way that we can do that. And that kind of was a big pivot for a lot of people in DHS, especially as well as our partners like the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. I think the other thing that we had to do is say, and there's much more good that can come from putting this data out there than there is bad, right? Sort of right after 9/11, there was a lot of people saying, oh, we got to take data down off websites, you know, it can, or else the terrorists will win, right? There was a lot of this kind of almost like online censorship that was going on. And yeah, we still have to take that into consideration, especially when you're putting as many data sets together out there on the web. But, you know, we fundamentally realized that a lot of the data sets we were working with were already out there in pockets everywhere anyway. What we were doing was just allowing our community to find these data sets through a single prism that they wanted to get easy access through. So the other thing that we had to do, and this was kind of put on me, was we had to not let the processes that are out there dominate our purpose. And what I mean by that is this put me in a room not with GIS professionals anymore, but with Office of General Counsels. And not just Office of General Counsels at DHS, at NGA, at EPA. And it was sort of like a bad insurance question, right? The answer is no. What was the question? And so I had to sit down and explain to them exactly where we were coming from, what we wanted to try and accomplish by moving to open data, and work through those processes with them. And is anybody in here just love dealing with lawyers? No. You're an odd duck anyway. And so that allowed us to really take a look at these access use constraints. We even found data that, you know, we were able to run back up the food chain and say, well, okay, why is this data locked down? Why is it FOU? Who made this decision? And we even ran into cases where people were like, I don't know. That's how it was when I arrived. Okay, well, who was the original classifying authority? I don't know. I think he left like 5 years ago. Okay, so could anybody in this organization that produces this data tell us why it's locked down? No, actually we can't. So maybe we should think about changing that control. And in many cases we did. We had a complete switch of FOUO to open data, and that allowed us to increase our holdings of what might go over the fence and be included in Highfield Open. But the third, I think, lesson learned from our standpoint and real advantage came with by leveraging, and this is not necessarily an infomercial for Esri, but I think it was one of the things that was extremely helpful in us deploying Highfield Open, was we were able to take advantage of a complete online, scalable, extensible cloud in our DHS, ArcGIS Online for Organizations account that was completely disconnected and not burdening our mission-critical systems at our data centers by putting Highfield Open out there. One of the questions that kept reoccurring was, so when you guys open this thing, you have any idea who's going to come? Nope. I can take a guess. I'll probably be wrong. In fact, I know I'll be wrong, and I was wrong. But you know, it was like, well, what's going to happen? Is that going to bring down our servers? What happens if like 300,000 people come to this on the first day? And it was helpful for me and the contract team, as well as the DHS Geospatial Management Office, to kind of be able to look across the table at those people asking those questions and say, that's going to be Esri and Microsoft Azure's problem. They're going to scale. That all of a sudden kind of removed some of the last fear, uncertainty, and doubt from the equation and really let us kind of, you know, say, okay, guys, go for it. And so we did. And we were pretty surprised with the results. We had a lot of members of our community starting off and saying, wow, thank you for getting off the crack of DVDs and being where you should have been in 2008, moving towards web services. We had other folks who had never even been a part of Highfield, who literally just through Googling and talking to people on social media and seeing the announcements of hashtag Highfield Open, they found some really incredible data to inform some of their research, like alternative fuels locations for the nation. Or they were able to say, you know, I had good data for my state, but what I didn't have was data for other surrounding jurisdictions around me in other states or other counties to help me in a mutual aid response. And they were just coming out of the woodwork, and we were able to expand and grow our own community just by putting our data out there. And of course, the other thing that happens when you put some, maybe even some bad data next to good data out on the web, is you get people to say, hey, I noticed you've got some gaps here. I have data. I can contribute to this. And now we're enriching and improving our data holdings by being a little bit more open. And so that was something that was, you know, maybe something that was already known by everybody else in this room, but it was really surprising to the folks at DHS that, hey, we're starting to interact in this community sense, and we're getting the community to help us do the work of the nation that we really need to do. So I think with that first experiment kind of now working itself through, we're starting to look at, okay, so what does the future hold for us? And from the subcommittee's perspective, they've been very surprised with the success that we've gained, and they're starting to say, okay, from now on, when a new data set enters our Highfield ecosystem, or we're considering a new data set, we're taking a open data first policy, meaning going to be on Highfield Open until somebody can actually create, generate, and account for, and will be responsible for saying why it shouldn't be and why that data set needs to be in a secure location. And we're going to start keeping better track of that. We're also going to try and do a better job of monitoring that in case someday we do feel like it should come back over the fence into open. We're working a lot harder to meter. Previously, when we sent out DVDs to our community, we just sent out 7 DVD sets with 576 layers on them and 26 geo databases. We had no idea how people were using that data. Now we have the ability to kind of look in there, see who's looking at what, who's downloading what data sets are truly important to our community, and that's going to help prioritize our enhancement processes. We're going to be able to say, hey, look, this data set, everybody's coming, we're getting feedback on it. We really need to make sure we got to have quarterly updates now, not just annual updates like we had in the future, or in the past, excuse me. How am I doing on time? Yeah, okay. So lastly, I just kind of want to wrap up with this. This is a kind of my quote that it's sort of my experiences that I've gained wrapped up in a whole. And that's the fact that, you know, things like federal agencies or data.gov or public data release has kind of been considered in many federal agencies as just digital exhaust. It's the last thing they do. Okay, they're going to make me put it up on the web somewhere. Okay, somebody wants to go get it. Great, they can have it, right? We threw it up on data.gov or we threw it up on our open or on some data site. And in my opinion, that digital exhaust approach, sure, that's one way you can do it, but if you actually take open data and put that as one half of an engine that helps drive your interaction with your community or your citizens, you're going to get a far better result. You're going to get a far better result in helping to improve your data, and you're going to get a far better result as far as how your community is interacting and helping you accomplish the mission that you're set out or charged to do. So it's just kind of a perspective shift, and that's something that I kind of came to realize throughout this process. So that's it. I guess this slide is maybe a little bit wrong in the sense that they just tore down our Highfield booth about an hour ago. But mm-hmm. I'm going to be hanging out. Would love to answer any questions you have, either right now or individually afterwards. Please come and see us. Send us an email at highfield@hq.dhs.gov if you ever have any questions about our community. Check us out on Highfield Open. I think the link's right there on the screen. And with that, maybe I'll turn it back over to Andrew.
Cool. Oh, thank you. You know, and it's actually amazing when you look at some of the data sets.
Question,
yeah.
Sorry for waking up.
No, it's all right.
When did you stop?
The first conversations around really like, Travis, you're not crazy, I think we should think about doing this, was around November of last year, and then we debuted Highfield Open at the Federal User Conference in February. It's literally that quick. That was me running around the Beltway trying to get a lot of permissions really quick. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Second question. In the initial statement, it says, by the cooperation of state, government, local municipalities, and all that kind of stuff, which usually isn't people that you cooperate with, but it takes things. In my society, it's the way, like, probably is in Europe, state is something very big, and the rest has to for their standards. How did you manage to get people that are providing you with data to do it voluntarily?
In some cases, it's not voluntary, to be honest. So in many cases, there are certain MOU arrangements, money is changing hands, and we're licensing data. In terms of open data, it's literally working those partnerships. It's the hard ground game. And in some cases, in particular data sets, like with, and I'm, anybody from EPA here? Okay, I'm gonna put you on the spot, but talk about a great success story. We were able to work a lot of the toxic inventory release data in concert right with them, and there was a lot of hemming and hawing, like, is this gonna be out there, is this gonna be open? And, you know, Harvey Simon and the great folks at EPA, you know, we all made that jump together when we released that data. So I think that was, a real testament. It was sort of like, you know, kids at a pool. You know, like, on the count of five, you're jumping, right? You're really doing this. So, I think that was an important step for us.
I think one of the interesting things is when we were talking and organizing this presentation, and it was like, do you know, like, more in your community who's using it? And, you know, had some ideas around it. It's like, yeah, it's great. And within ArcGIS Open Data, we can put in Google Analytics and then sort of see like what are the popular data sets and all these other things. But one of the things that you said that kind of like really stood out at me was, yeah, it's being used right now more than we ever thought. And we're like going to be blown away when like an event happens. Like we're not hoping for something bad, but whenever something bad happens, that's when it's mad request for all the data. Well, now that it's all self-service, you know, how many people start running up to the buffet and
yeah.
We start to see how it gets used, and it'll be faster than, hey, like DVDs.
Yeah, I just to build on that point, Andrew. You know, there were so many people who received the DVDs in the past because well, that was the only way to get the data, but they didn't enjoy loading up 7 DVDs worth of data, and that puts some sort of burden on their IT footprint. And when we were able to say, look, it's just all right there. We're hosting a service. It'll scale to the demand. You know, that was a big win for them. They can now not allocate those resources, those valuable or precious IT resources to rehost Highfield data. They can now host other data sets that may be more, you know, mission critical or tied to their mission that they can't get more openly. So,
okay. Cool. Thank you. I'm going to give you an applause because
being from DC, I never expect one. So don't. That was nice.
Cool. No, and then the other thing, and just I am going to shameless plug and put on my sales hat for a second. Hosting the data in ArcGIS Online is interesting because I think sometimes we actually look at like how we price it out. It's like 2.4 credits per 10 megabytes per month. It's like, but Dropbox gives me like 10 gig for free. It's different. If we were just hosting file storage that people could just access and download whenever, actually that file storage is really cheap. And we do offer that. It's a different level. When we're publishing data into online, there's a database behind that that has 99.9% uptime that auto-scales in the cloud. And when we think about that, we're really just using the storage size as like a way to measure how much to charge. And when you load all your data in there, I think we saw something around like 10 gigs of data. It was about $3,000 a year. It's like, whoa, that's $3,000 a year. But wait, has anybody ever set up like auto-scaling cloud machines? You probably spend $3,000 in a month on accident setting that up. And so if you're paying that for the entire year, it's like, wow. And then when this thing takes off and gets used and it's really heavily hit, there's no extra cost. We don't charge for API usage. It's the same cost. So it's actually a huge value behind that. So we were excited to kind of pull that one out. All right. I'll go back to like product fun story guy now. Put away the sales thing. So the other strategy that we have around open data, and this is one that I love, is starting to work on public-private partnerships. So if we think about maybe the progression of this presentation, we started off talking about we want to go ahead and put like apps or stories in front of our data to kind of work with the citizens. We have this idea of, you know, we have this community of other data users. So, you know, if that's other departments under a large organization and you know, even prepping all of our data, make sure it's available for something big. Then the next part is, great, how do I like really maximize the impact of this open data? And what we're seeing here is a really nice pattern where we develop these public-private partnerships. So Paige Fitzgerald from Waze was with us yesterday. They had to go back home to their Google world today. So I'm just going to go ahead and present the section for her. And we'll talk a little bit about what is Waze. We can talk about how we're sharing data into them and what this whole kind of setup means with a public-private partnership. To maybe kick things off, and I shouldn't say maybe because we're just going to go all in, is we'll watch a short video. So this gives you a nice break from Travis and I.
When Waze first launched, its core was about outsmarting traffic together. CCP is the next natural evolution of Waze. Now we're really talking about saving time for millions of people. Our drivers are out on the streets every hour of every day, reporting the most accurate information on closures and congestion. We are taking that information and delivering it to the government officials who can address incidents in real time. this is a real program with real impact. We're actually sitting down with partners and having measurable results every day.
Boston is a city of around 600,000 residents, but during a typical workday, we grow to over 1 million people. Waze has allowed us to rapidly iterate through experiments to see what sort of effects interventions have on congestion and traffic.
We had a major snow last March. Seeing the data come in from Waze every 2 minutes allows us to grab user reports, and then we can respond to those reports in a timely manner.
Genesis is a software company that provides solutions to help first responders. By putting Waze inside our Genesis Pulse product, our first responders are saving 5 minutes, and that saves lives.
We didn't expect that so quickly we would have cities redistributing traffic personnel, that we would have 911 systems relying on this data.
As more data comes online, Waze is proud to bring together innovative transportation leaders from all around the world to develop the next chapter in traffic management.
At the core, CCP has the same mission as Waze, which is to save people time every day. It's showing us what our new goals are going to be. New forms of safety, new forms of urban mobility, helping cities become a lab for making lives better.
Cool. So I think that was a pretty nice overview of what they've started putting together here with this Connected Citizens program. I also shamelessly show that video because I made a handsome cameo in there. I don't know if anybody else saw it. I know you did. So what we actually want to talk about is, you know, what they're doing with this Connected Citizens program. So they want to go out and actually start working with local governments. You have all of this authoritative data that should be used and broadcast into all of these other systems. So if we think about within a city, if somebody goes ahead and assigns an address, that guy's very authoritative. He's dictating where the mail goes, how this person's going to be found. There shouldn't be any like, hey, maybe we don't have it. Like when he puts in the address and hits save, that should ultimately cascade out to every other addressing system, geocode thing in the world. Same with streets. Hey, we have a new street going in. I went ahead and I drew that neighborhood subdivision in. Awesome. Now I want to share that out. That should go to every single map out there. You know, we have this massive bifurcation of maps right now, and it's like, oh, well, Google doesn't have this. Microsoft has this. OpenStreetMap has this, but not this. It's kind of nutty. So what can we do is try to start to build more of these public-private partnerships. So now we draw in a new street. Awesome. That starts to update and reflect into all of these systems. So with Waze, the way that they're actually starting to look at this is working with the individual cities and how we want to start really working on sharing some road closure information. So kind of go through and we'll see what is Waze. So first off, if anybody doesn't know, it's a navigation application. So if I want to say I want to go from A to B, it gives me a smart route to get there. It takes into account traffic, so if there's any sort of backups or jams, it's going to route me around that. Hooray. The other thing is it's also a crowdsourced application. So as users of the application are driving on the street, we can report different events and things that we see. So as we mentioned, this is a free, real-time crowdsourced application. You see the map moving around. So this is kind of amazing. 50 million monthly active users and over 360,000 volunteers work on some of this information that goes into Waze. One thing that they always like to cover and make sure to state is they don't support texting and driving. Their app can be fully voice automated. So if you want to report something, you don't have to start fumbling through the dashboard. You can say, I want to report incident, and walk through that process. So the app is very much about safety. It's about awareness on the road. So as I'm driving, I know that there's a car pulled over in the shoulder. I know that there's a disabled vehicle. I know there's a police officer over in the corner lane who's pulled somebody over. All of these different things, right? And what they start to see is, you know, if the citizens are reporting all of this information, you know, how do we connect this back to, you know, the cities that we're working with? So right now we have, I think, over 75 partners. I think it's almost closer to 100 now. So that is a lot of different governments that are working with Waze and already sharing the data in. Typically, who they start to work with is Department of Transportation, because they manage a lot of road closures. Cities manage a lot of road closures, sharing data back with transit agencies, and also how they're dealing with emergency response. Now, one of the things that they offer through this Connected Citizens program is this two-way data sharing agreement. This is a free data exchange. So you can go ahead and report in, so the data that you can share to them, planned road closures, if there's any incidents, or we have other data. So under some of that other data, that could be parking locations, could be street center lines, it could be speed limits. Parking locations is kind of amazing, because if I'm routed from A to B, as I get close to B, if it can tell me where to go park, that's awesome. In one of the partner summits, somebody was asking a question, said, hey, so we had this whole, you know, major golf tournament in our city. What if we have temporary parking and it's only available for like 3 days? Can we just, you know, put some dates on that and give it to you? And they're like, yeah, absolutely. Wow, like we could actually start to route people to temporary parking. Follow-up question. What happens if the parking lot's full? Can the attendant say it's full and you guys stop routing to them? And they're like, okay, you get it. That's awesome, but not yet. So we can get there, which is really cool. I'm also sharing in like school zones. So if the app is about awareness and I'm about to enter into a school zone, I might not pay attention to the, you know, flashing lights or anything like that. Ah, I get a little notification in app, okay, slow down. So really cool. I'm sharing this information up into this application. As a city, this is an application that I don't need to build, I don't need to maintain, and this is something that people are already using. It also works outside my city limits. Because typically, if I'm a city, I only have data in my city limits, right? So awesome. I share into this. People can use it as visitors come into my city. Ha, they have the ideal experience. I've improved it because I've put in the best data. Another case for other data, Johns Creek, Georgia is sharing out their business listings. So every 30 days, they update their business listings through open data. And they know when a new business comes in town because they've assigned a license. Somebody had to come in and apply for it. It was issued. Therefore, new business is up. So they share that, and Waze worked with them and said, all right, well, we're going to actually start indexing this and putting this in the map. Interesting, because that almost started turning into an economic development strategy. This new coffee shop opens up. They apply for a business license. Waze just, or Johns Creek, the city, just made sure that they were found in this app. So I type in their name, and there I am. It picks it up right away. It's almost like helping them with this like geo-SEO, if you will. Now, the other part is, you know, what are some of the other things that Waze provides? So this is a cool one where this was looking at the Patriots parade after they won the Super Bowl. So we see the parade route actually listed up right here. I think you can see my pointer. And they sent this route in ahead of time. They knew that this was going to be a major traffic event. And since they had this major traffic event and coordinated with the city, you know what Waze did on behalf of the city and to help out their users? They sent them a push notification. So then everybody who had the app, who might not have cared about sports ball, woke up in the morning and was like, well, I'm going to go drive somewhere. And it's like, morning. There's a parade going over here. You might want to completely avoid downtown today. Oh, thank you. Change my plans or go do something else. Now, looking at some of the data, like what are they providing back? So if the users out there, the crowd is reporting incidents, so if there is an accident, a disabled vehicle, hazards such as potholes, they're putting all of these things, you know, just reporting it in the app, and they're also detecting jams. So when did the speed of traffic actually drop below its average? And they return those jams as a line segment. Now, again, this is kind of a bummer because the showcase is already closed, but we had this going on in the Geo Event Island. They provide this as a feed. So we can get to this feed through GeoRSS, or they also provide it through a JSON feed. Well, we brought that into Geo Event, and we can go ahead and display everything on the map. With a stream service, we can also log all of that data so we can start to do some historical analysis over time. One of the cases in Boston, I'm getting ahead of myself, they actually improved traffic congestion in one area by, I think it was 18 to 20%, because they used all of this data to kind of go back and look at it through time, and they took it to the traffic engineer and said, hey, what if we tweaked the lights here and here? Huge improvement. That's awesome. But one of the things we know about GeoEvent is if they're feeding this data in, we can actually trigger different actions. So if somebody goes ahead and reports an accident, what could we do with that? Could we route that directly to a 911 operator? Where else might we want to go ahead and notify somebody? So cool, we mentioned that it's the live API. It's outputting as JSON and XML. XML is actually covered under their GeoRSS. And this is a live feed. They update this every 2 minutes. So if you can tie into that, it's pretty powerful. I mentioned that they have, you know, this kind of application right here that they share out with other agencies. So whether this is a TV or radio agency, and the Boston mayor actually has a dashboard that shows some of this. You can put in, you know, from here to there, and it starts to tell you, you know, is traffic increasing or decreasing? How bad is it out there? And then impact. So here's where we actually get to see some cool case studies on how some of our partners have used the data. So I gotta sit down because it's so small. So we talk about putting this in traffic management centers, 911 centers, analyzing the data. This was feeding right back into that Boston story, right, where we improved the traffic by 18 to 20%. Now, one of their partners that was in the emergency management space actually collected a bunch of data and did a study, and they compared it to the Waze data. So one of the things that they found, they mapped out, and we see this kind of scatter plot here, every 911 call and then that same incident reported by Waze. People using Waze reported it 4 minutes faster before 911 was called. Isn't that crazy? Because nowadays we all sort of assume, like, everybody has a phone, yeah, they're in the accident, they'll call 911. Yeah, what if the person's hurt? I don't know. And so you start to report it through this. Wow, what if that just went to the dispatcher? And they did put out a story on it. One of the dispatchers saw the incident get reported, saw it get verified again, and said, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and dispatch somebody out to this. I think in this particular case, they said it was like 7 minutes later or something like that, they got the phone call saying, 911, you know, hey, this was the accident. I'm like, oh, okay, well, they officially log it at that point. Since she pre-dispatched, they recorded a 3.5-minute response time. They got there right away. So they're really, that is critical, especially if this was a really bad accident, right? So pretty impressive to see how this data can be used. This was a great one. So when the Pope came to visit, this was an interesting time in the Waze community. So Washington, D.C. was trying to put together some maps because a large majority of D.C. was going to be shut down. Also, across the turnpike in Pennsylvania. So as he was driving across, there was all sorts of traffic shut down. They started to do two-way communication. This is where they started to send out those push alerts, telling people, hey, by the way, the Pope's in town. This is the route he's going to be on. You might just want to stay home or stay off of this route. Crisis response. So this is really interesting. When there is a major event or a major crisis, some of the communities and partners start working with Waze, reach out to them, say, hey, what can we do? Well, then any user of the app can start to do different things. In one of the cases, I think we have the name in here, like there was a massive flood. And so you could open up the app and ask for shelter. And they added in like something like 63 community shelters into the app, and every user could go ahead and get routed to that shelter. Yeah, sure, maybe it wasn't a time of driving, but, you know, hey, there was this massive flood. I asked for shelter. At least it got me to where it is. And we could also do that push notification. Do you need shelter? Click on it. Awesome. And it's routing me local. Impact of Boston. We all know that I got really excited and gave this one about 4 slides ago. And then additional use cases. So people are reporting potholes in this. So they give this data to DC for Pothole Palooza. It's a big event they have, I think, in like March, where they go ahead and replace all the potholes. It's also kind of interesting because it there's people that actually pay specifically for like a pothole reporting app. I'm not going to download that. I'll probably use it if it's already included in something. And check it out. You actually got like a free pothole reporter by joining in and sharing in this program. They're also working to go ahead and get snow plows added on the map so we can show the snow plows in near real time. So it's not like you'll see it moving down your street and clearing things. A little bit of a delay, but you'll actually see it on the map. Again, it's about awareness. You know, should I go down this street or is a plow coming right at me? Oh, this last one's really cool. Sorry, Waze reported, when they looked at this in the city of Boston, and Waze users reported a car in the shoulder. In the city, the roads are pretty narrow. There is no shoulder. These citizens were actually trying to say something else. There's a car that's double parked. Double parking is a very serious problem in Boston. So what they could do is actually analyze the data and look for every time that they had, you know, vehicle and shoulder to identify where all the double parking was happening. And then they can send out an officer on a bicycle to help move along traffic and help kind of expedite travel on the road there. So, all right, so what's next? Yeah, they're scaling up. We're getting more people into the program. They're bringing in more data. We saw some of these case studies. They're always working on getting new ones and putting it out there. They do have a pretty good blog that they post a lot of these different stories on. So if you're actually interested in joining this program and you want to know more or take some of this information to somebody you work with, or whether it's like the manager or the mayor, and say, hey, I think we should do this. Here's case studies around it. They mentioned in here Carpool. That's a new app that they have, a ride-sharing app. They've done it in Tel Aviv and San Francisco. It's not released everywhere else, and not sure if they completely have plans to do that yet, but they have some really interesting ideas and plans around it. Could we subsidize people for actually giving carpool rides at a certain amount per mile? And then the big thing here that's really cool, parking and tolls. So if you can tell me where to go ahead and park, and if they built in-app payment, how that could really help us start to get through toll roads. We don't have to stop and put the money in anymore. We're using the app. It just knows, and there's kind of like a pass-go lane. So on behalf of Paige, thank you. I went through a lot of slides in a little bit of a jerky order. I'm very sorry about that. But I think we kind of all get what we can do here with sharing the information and bringing it back. We'll kind of open this up and see if anybody has some questions about this program. Any thoughts? Yes. Okay, good question. So does the data have to be in a certain schema to share them road closures with them? They prefer it. So if you go into ArcGIS Online, say create new feature service, select a template and select road closures, surprise! We changed the schema last year and it matches exactly what Waze wants. So you can go to waze.com/CCP for Connected Citizens Program, sign up, and they'll ask for a URL to your feed. You can give them your ArcGIS URL. If they're confused and don't know what to do with it, they call me, and we take care of the rest. But it really does start with road closures. And then if you want to get more data in there, it's really up to you. And they have the summits are really good as far as listening to user feedback. And people have gone with ideas that, can you do this, and can you do this, and can you do this? And I'm like, okay, maybe. Like we said, John's Creek, they said, bring in our business listings. They kind of looked at each other and were like, okay, give us a couple months. They worked through it, and now they're doing it. So, another question? Yes? That's a great question. So there's always a concern about, when we're using crowdsourced data, is there a lot of garbage coming in? Now, when you get in the Connected Citizens program, one of the things they share back to you is, you know, great, here's the URL feed, but here's all the parameters. So users have scores. If I've been using the app a lot and I'm trusted, I go up. And then if something has been verified, so if I'm driving down the street and I'm like, oh, there's a car accident over here. Travis drives down the street. He gets prompted, do you see this accident? He hits yes. Oh, okay, it's there. So then what we can do is start to filter some of these things and say, all right, you know, if it has like a reliability score of 8 or more, and it's been verified at least one time or it's been verified 2 times, will automatically dispatch. So we can kind of weed that out. Do we risk losing somebody who has a low score because they're a new user, reported something, and just nobody else verified it yet? Yes. But you know, that's the risk of filtering the noise, right? So, is there a question in the back? I'm just kind of excited to... Okay, sorry about that. Any other ideas or questions about this? It's actually really powerful. All of our partners that have been sharing in this have been super excited. They get their community to start using the app. From the kind of GIS perspective, you know, we have people that say, great, you know, I'm going to go to like the IT manager and tell them about this great program. It starts to make the mayor and the city look super innovative because we're partnering with this really creative company. This is, and in, with all the other companies that you know spoke to and we're trying to work with, you know, this is by far one of the most progressive programs out there, and what they're willing to do and how they're willing to help out and work with cities. So I'd encourage everybody to sign up. With that, the Esri logo means you are free. But we have one more question. How easy is it for you and the city to use the Waze data? So to answer the question, how easy is it to bring the data into ArcGIS? We actually have a couple options. So the live feed, since it comes in through GeoRSS, we actually can add that to a web map as a layer and then refresh it every so often. What I have found is we kind of have to filter it down a little bit more, and it has to be a specific event. We can't just kind of load it all in there. If we bring it in through GeoEvent and through a stream service, that's pretty fast. It pulls it. I think the advantage of using GeoEvent is actually logging everything local, so you can kind of do an analysis back through time. And then other really cool things looking at GeoEvent, you know, if we started to see, hey, traffic's backed up, we have jams. If that could fire off an alert, whether it goes to police or it goes to our traffic engineers, and like, oh, wow, I got an alert. There's another big jam over here. How can they change that? You know, if there's somebody sitting there like, yeah, let's just go green light a little longer, click, okay, jam's gone, back the other way. And what if that was even automated? So like GeoEvent told another system, hey, let's leave the green lights another like 35 seconds for the next 5 minutes and see if it clears up this situation. So really cool things that we can do beyond that. But from this very, very simple level, yeah, we can just add the GeoRSS into the web. Any other questions? Yes. I wear many hats. Right now with ArcGIS Online, if we want to have metadata, we have to import the metadata document in with the item. So standards-based metadata. And then if we do share that out as open data, that metadata document, somebody can click on it and view it, and we make it look pretty. If they download the shapefile, we include it, and then we even pull some attributes out of the standards-based metadata and use that to populate the dataset page. So, and just an interesting thing about open data and this relationship here for a second, and going back to why I love lawyers, when we first started working with Waze and setting this up, you know, they have an agreement. So, hey, you know, if you sign this agreement, you can share data to us. Well, it's kind of weird. I have to sign an agreement to give you my data. We worked with them and said, hey, because they wanted to cover themselves, right? They didn't want to say, hey, you took my data and now we're going to sue you because you're stealing from the city. No. So we actually said, what about Creative Commons Zero, which means it's data that can be used for commercial use, international, and it can be modified. Oh, that's a good question. Let's send it to the lawyers at Google, because Waze is owned by Google. Separate companies. And it came back, and they said, you know what, there's actually precedent. It took a while, but the Google lawyers were like, we agree. We will accept Creative Commons licensing. So as kind of step one, what we can do is, great, we can join or sign up for the Connected Citizens program, give them the URL. As long as we have a Creative Commons license enacted on the data, awesome. My data can go into them. And then we can work on this two-way agreement where, you know, hey, they're going to give data back to you. Let's make sure it's not misused. We can't say things. And they're trying to prevent themselves. You can't say things like, we control Google Maps now. It's like, no, you don't. They're different products. So that's kind of where that agreement comes in. But such benefit to go ahead and do that, because this is really good real-time data.
Andrew, I just want to comment on her previous question about the item-level metadata. So there's a little bit of hand-jamming that you have to do, but what I found, and this was, you know, what was really helpful, because we were staring down the barrel of loading up 275 data sets in a rapid fashion, is that we were able to write a couple of Python scripts. Once we had all of those item-level metadata descriptions written out, put in like a spreadsheet or something, we could just write a Python script and pushed it all up there. So it was actually, and then we kind of went in, maybe there's some things tweaking or whatever, but it was really helpful. And I'm thinking, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, there's the new Python API that may actually make that a little bit more helpful down the road.
They've done improvements. I don't know necessarily for metadata, but it's interesting in the spirit of community and open. We should post that script to code sharing.
Yeah, I think it's already up there on code sharing. I think we actually
I look out for you. Yeah. We're friends. Okay, be free. Enjoy your last session, or I won't tell anybody if you go sit by the beach.
Thank you all.
Thanks, everyone.